This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
This is the GM Shuffle.
I think we should call the 2019 draft the I Want to Be Traded draft. Like, and it's led by its leader in Kyler Murray.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. Michael, we are 1 week away from the 2022 NFL Draft here in Las Vegas, and you'll be out here, Michael.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I've not been at the draft sites since it moved from New York, and we used to do it in the NBC, like, what's that hall?
City Music Hall.
City, yeah, we were there. The fans were there. It was kind of neat, and that was a lot of fun. But this will be even better, knowing that you can add the Vegas flair to it. Plus, I think there's going to be some activity, Fem. I think there's going to be a lot of things happening in terms of decision making as we go into this second phase of the off season.
Yeah, it's really going to be intriguing if there's trades and people willing to trade down, maybe trading up to quarterbacks. We'll get into all that discussion all throughout this week here as we approach the draft. But as always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And to tweet at us, tweet at Michael at M Lombardi NFL. You can tweet at me at Femi Abebefe, our producer Stephen Bond on the ones and twos as always here. And Michael, we got some big news Wednesday in the NFL. Deebo Samuel, the do-everything wide receiver for the San Francisco 49ers, has officially requested a trade from the San Francisco 49ers. This sounds like it could be money, it could be other things, but how did we end up here, in your opinion, between Samuel and the San Francisco 49ers?
I think we should call the 2019 draft the I Want to Be Traded draft. Like, and it's led by its leader in Kyler Murray, which we'll get to him in a minute. And then it morphs into some of these other players who haven't really been able to get the contracts that they think they deserve, certainly. And now we're hearing a lot of complaining going on. But I think the Samuel thing is, a lot of it is tied to Garoppolo. Look, I don't deny that the 49ers want to redo Samuel's deal. I think they have to. I mean, going through this new book, he's like Lenny Moore, who's in the Hall of Fame. Lenny Moore, Femi, played running back and wide receiver for the Baltimore Colts, and he didn't do it. He lined up at receiver. He lined up at running back. And, I mean, there'd be games where he would carry the ball quite a bit. And this kid is as dynamic, maybe not as fast, which is why he didn't go until the second round, but he still is dynamic. And I think because of that, and he's watching the landscape of the league and he's saying, where's my coin? And he deserves it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. He's probably their most valuable player on offense there for the 49ers. He's surpassed George Kittle, in my opinion, in terms of his value. And here's what John Lynch had to say, the 49ers GM, earlier this offseason at the Combine, on the importance and what Deebo Samuel means to their team.
Herm Edwards used to tell me, you can be special when you have that skill and then you have that elite will. And I think when you watch Deebo play, that's what I see. And it's inspiring. It lifts everyone. And I think we get the same thing in our meetings. Who's the player you try to play like? I mean, we even have defensive players saying Deebo. And I think that speaks volumes for who he is.
I mean, Michael, when you hear John Lynch say that to the media, I mean, it sounds like inspiring, and he's the face of what they would like the model 49er player to be. Why don't they just break the bank and give him his money?
Well, I think they're tied up in the cap right now. And, the one thing I think that they've seen is this market has gone crazy and players are reacting to it. And it's a very volatile market. And, you know, Cooper Kupp wants to get paid just like everybody else. The other guy in that 19 draft we didn't talk about is A.J. Brown. He wants to get paid. D.K. Metcalf, he wants to get paid. So there's so many guys that are looking to get paid from that draft that, you know, I don't know how the Niners don't. I would think, to me, the way I would describe Debo would be completely different than Lynch. I think this is a player who is more effective with the ball in his hand than he is as a receiver. I think his receiving running routes are not what you would say, oh my gosh, but the way they utilize him on slants and inside patterns and then being able to tackle him are all problems. I mean, this is a kid who led the state in South Carolina kickoff returns in high school. He's a hard dude to tackle. Same thing with A.J. Brown. They're hard to tackle. They may not be as hard to cover, but they're hard to tackle. And I think that his competitive fiber, when he has the ball in his hands, separates them, and certainly he makes them a better team, and especially considering that they want to throw the ball in the middle of the field. You know, their passing game is from the numbers in. I mean, they're not an outside-the-numbers passing game. They want to run play action and throw the ball between the hash marks, and this is where he succeeds so well. I don't see how they're going to be able to replace him. I mean, but they're carrying Garoppolo. I'm told this reliably. Like, at the owners' meetings, you know, Kyle Shanahan is asking other teams, like, why aren't you interested in Garoppolo? He's better than what you have, you know? And they don't want to give Garoppolo away. And Garoppolo is certainly valuable, maybe not to Amal Shah on our network, but he is valuable. And yet, you know, they don't want to have to just give him away. And I think ultimately that being tied up is what's creating the issue. Of course, all these other contracts, too.
Yeah, and you mentioned Garoppolo. One of the things that's tying it up is the shoulder surgery that he just had earlier in the offseason. We don't know when he'll be cleared to throw and participate in training camp. So that could be a thing that maybe gives teams a little bit of pause for Jimmy Garoppolo. But one of the things that's interesting to me about Debo Samuel is that we've talked about the money, but it sounds like it might not just be money, that the usage and how the 49ers have used him could also be factoring into this. Because I saw these stats earlier from Next Gen Stats. First 33 games of his career, he was in the backfield, lined up in the backfield 2.1% of the time, out wide 72.4% of the time. The last 11 games, Michael, in the backfield 21% of the time, out wide 53% of the time. They moved him around in the slot and tight formations as well. Is that sustainable? I mean, Debo Samuel, it sounds like he doesn't want to be taking those running back kind of hits, and that's almost being used against him. Do you think that the Niners could tweak how they use Debo Samuel, or is this something that they just kind of have to use him in that wide back role that they've been using him over the last 11 games?
Well, I mean, look, I think it's something they fell into, right? So he starts off his career, he's got 14 carries his first year. The next year, he only has eight. He only plays in five. He only starts five games. I mean, durability has been somewhat of an issue for him. And then last year was the watershed moment where all of a sudden he just turned everything around. Carries the ball 59 times, averages 6.2 yards a carry. So it changed, and he gets eight touchdowns rushing. I mean, he has more touchdowns rushing. I think that would be a great quiz. Did he have more touchdowns rushing or more touchdowns pass catching? He had more rushes, 8-6. So, you know, he's been able to dominate from that running back. And I think probably when he's looking at his longevity, you know, he's saying, look, I'm a multidimensional guy, which is fascinating because Tyreek Hill, I thought, was going to get used much like they used Debo. I thought that he was going to, when he left Oklahoma State, he was a dynamic running back, dynamic. I mean, he was great as a running back. I never saw him as a slot receiver that Andy Reid did. Then they moved him out, and now he's an all-time receiver. But to me, this kid showed flashes of doing something that they kind of layered themselves into. I don't know if he could be upset about it because it certainly makes him more valuable. He's a weapon. I mean, he averaged 18-2 a catch last year. Ben, I mean, and a lot of that is we know they're not throwing deep routes down there. They don't have a drop-back pass game. So they're throwing play action, and it's yards after the catch. And those 18-7 are yards after the catch that he's gaining. You know, he's gaining those yards. So to me, I don't know how they don't sign him. I really don't. I don't know how you could look at him and say, okay, you know, he shouldn't be one of the top players. I know we got Devontae Adams' contract. We got Hill. Hopkins' contract still resonates up there as on average per year. But this is a young kid entering his fourth year, and the same thing's going to happen. And the number one leader in the clubhouse on all this is going to be Kyler Murray. He is going to be the guy who changes perhaps the 19 draft because he's not coming to camp. He's holding out, and I think he wants to move himself away from the Cardinals, and I don't think he's going to change his tune.
Well, why do you think this isn't getting done with Kyler? Is it just that deadlines make deals and there's no real urgency to get this done in April? Because the Cardinals don't want to trade Kyler Murray from what we've heard. Kyler Murray doesn't want to play unless he gets that extension that he's seen other quarterbacks get, maybe that $40 million per year. Is this just time and we have to wait and then maybe towards training camp something gets done, or is there something else at play here?
I think there might be something else at play. I'm not sure what his dynamic – I don't think it's with Cliff Kingsbury. I don't know what his dynamics is internally within the organization. I think there is some issues there, and I think that's a concern. And so because of that, I think no matter what happens, I don't think he's going to want – I don't think they could put a number in front of him that he's going to want to sign. I think he wants to go somewhere else. I think he's trying to go somewhere else, and
really?
His agent's
okay.
trying to make that happen. To me – I think if you're Steve Keim, you've got to say to yourself, can I get this done? He knows what's going on. I mean, he knows what's actually happened, and he's got to call a bluff, right? Do I do this, or do I trade for Baker Mayfield, bring him in, trade Kyler and get a package, and then revamp my team? That's a question he's got to be asking himself right now. And I think that's a question he better find the answer. Maybe he could find the answer on draft day. But I would suspect that would be the case.
That's just it sounds kind of crazy to me that they would be looking to move on from Kyler Murray. Now, maybe the situation is irreparable and it cannot be fixed. But I mean, Steve Keim has a job because of Kyler Murray. Like, let's be honest about it. Like,
no, he has a job because he's him and the owner are buddies. I mean, you can go over Keim's career now. Look, I mean, he's got a relationship with Michael Bidwell that's second to none. I mean, it's grandfathered in. I mean, some of the things that have happened off the field with Steve, and hopefully he's got his life in order.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And then the draft picks. I mean, not many people survive that. Not many people survive that. And so, I got fired in Philly after we had one of their best drafts ever. I mean, and he didn't get fired, after having problems off the field. So, there's something going on. But I think what he's got to do, and Michael Bidwell's got to do as well, is figure out, can we actually get this done? And then what's our resource to if we can't? That's a fair question to ask yourself now. You've just seen the market flip, right? We've seen Russell Wilson go to Denver for a multitude of picks. We've seen Deshaun go for a ridiculous guaranteed contract and a multitude of picks, right? So, like, if you're sitting here, you can get Baker. I mean, the Browns are going to pay some of Baker's salary, so you know that. You know, the guy that coached, that recruited him, that had him at one time at Texas Tech is your guy. Now, I'm not saying Baker's your answer. All I'm saying is Baker could be the guy for a year while you try to find another guy in next year's draft, and because you're going to get a boatload of picks.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess what I meant with Kyler Murray and Keim is that he had drafted Josh Rosen the year before, and it was looking rocky until Kyler Murray comes
that.
In.
Can you imagine that?
I
mean, that's like you got to be the luckiest guy in America to survive that. I mean, some of the picks he gets to survive, but he's got a great relationship with the owner. God bless him. I'm not faulting him. I never had that, where he got lifetime security. He just got a contract extension.
Which is – it's unbelievable, and I get that they made the playoffs for the first time, but I believe it was since 2015 for the Arizona Cardinals. But the fact that he was able to pick quarterbacks in the first round in back-to-back years, I don't think many GMs would be able to do that, which speaks to the relationship he has with Michael Bidwell,
mentioned. It's the old Bill Walsh thing. The guy that sits next to the owner during the game is the guy. I mean, that's the guy. When you sit next to me, if you're ever an NFL executive and you're sitting next to the owner, the coach is never going to trust you. He's never going to trust you, ever. He's never going to trust you because Walsh, believed that the guy that sits next to the owner is going to convince him that everything that's wrong with the team lies with coaching and that it's always the coach's fault. We're a better team than what we really are. Trust me, I've seen it happen. I've seen it. And if you sit up there with the owner in this market, in this climate, you're just pissing off your coach. Now, I'm not saying he's pissing off Cliff because, they brought Cliff in. I mean, remember, they hired Cliff. He was the offensive coordinator at USC when they hired him.
Yep.
I mean, what owner lets you do that? I mean, what owner will allow you to do that?
He was at USC for about 30 days before taking that Cardinals job. Politics factor into the NFL like any other office, and we'll see some wide receivers trying to politic their way to some big extensions. We'll talk about that on the other side. Let's take a quick break. This is the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yeah! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Well, Michael, these wide receivers, I tell you what, man, they want to get paid, and they want to get paid right now after seeing the landscape of the free agent market with Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs, Devontae Adams, all receiving big, massive contracts. And let's start with the guy that we started this podcast talking about, Deebo Samuel. I'm looking at the numbers here. He's the only player, Michael, in NFL history with 1,400-plus receiving yards and 300-plus rushing yards in the same season. You mentioned he led the league in yards per reception. He also led the league in yards after catch per reception with 10.1 here. What would a contract for Deebo Samuel look like, whether it be with the Niners or maybe a team that trades for him?
You know, that's a great question. And I think ultimately, you know, the only player that kind of is similar to him, you know, is Tyreek Hill. I mean, when you go back and look at some of the players, you know, I compared him earlier to Lenny Moore. Well, Lenny Moore played, you know, in his rookie season in 1956, he starts 12 games. He carries the ball 88 times, has 8 touchdowns. He averages 7.5 a carry. And in the receiving, he only has 11 receptions. Okay, the next year, he comes back, he carries it 98 times. He averages 5 yards a carry, and he catches 40 passes and averages 17.2 yards. I mean, is that similar to what we're talking about with Deebo, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of similar. I mean, 98 rushes was the most he ran the football was in 64, where he carried it 157 times. He scored 16 touchdowns that year, by the way. You know, which, you know, could you imagine what the contract would be for him?
I mean.
I mean, think about it, right? I mean, poor Lenny Moore said, I was born the wrong time, you know. But I think, you know, looking at the one of these things, too, is these contracts are so misrepresented in the public relations. For example, you know, Tyreek Hill has a normal contract for 4 years. In his fifth year, when he's 32 years old, that contract goes up to it goes from $21.8 million to $43.9 million. The bulk of the money is in the fifth year, which tells you the fifth year is a phony year. It's a phony year. Now, maybe they'll pay it, maybe they won't, but it's a phony year. And that number really enhances the total value of the deal. So when you look at the deal and you see he's got $102 million in base salaries, cut out $43 million of that, and what are you left with, right? So that lowers the average per year, and I think that's ultimately the sticking block, is some of these deals are not what we perceive them to be, you know? Right. And so where would you go with Deebo? Would you go with him in that $21 million range? I think so. You know, one thing about Tyreek is he's 28 years old. You're talking about signing a player to a long-term contract that is really just 26 years old. So you're getting him right in his prime. And I think, to me, that's why it's such a hard contract to do. But let's be real clear here. The Niners don't have enough. They could create the room. There's always room to create. Mm-hmm. Like, you could always create cap room. But unfortunately, until they get rid of Garoppolo, they really can't. I mean, they're going to struggle. And that's only because they've got $24 million tied up in him, in paragraph 5. You know, under normal circumstances, they would go in there, like they did with Trent Williams. They would go in there and lower his paragraph 5, guarantee it, and do that. You know, they could do it with McGinchy. He's making $10 million. But I think for the most part, you know, there are only two players where they could really get substantial cap room are Garoppolo, who's at $24 million, and McGinchy, who's at $10 million. Right?
Yep.
So he's at $10 million, but it's all guaranteed. So he doesn't want to do an extension with them because he's on that last year, and he doesn't want to give them any more years unless they do a full-time deal. I mean, they can't go to – Kittle makes $1 million this year, right? Fred Warner makes 2.5. You can't lower any but those guys' cap numbers. So where you lower your cap number is where a player who has a high paragraph 5, and the only one left to do it is Garoppolo, and they got to have to figure that out. The problem with Garoppolo, too, is, though, Femi's, as much as I love Jimmy, he's always hurt.
Yeah,
I mean, he has a hard time staying healthy.
And another guy that they're looking to re-sign is Nick Bosa as well. I mean, he's eligible for a contract extension, one of the best pass rushers in the league. So that's another thing that they're going to have to figure out there from that 2019 class, that they hit some home runs there, getting Bosa second overall and then also getting Deebo Samuel. But Now it's time to pay the piper, and the Niners are in this tricky situation.
Yeah. You know the way they've operated. They traded Buckner so they could pay some of the other defensive linemen. So they're going to pay. You know that.
Yeah.
But part of it is you got to do this. And one of the reasons I think they drafted Lance and got a really cheap quarterback is so they can do some of these moves. They've signed Warner, right? They did that. So I think that that's really where they're going to go. Right now they have Debo under contract. They have him under contract for $3 million. So they don't really have to worry about that. They've got Bosa under contract, and he's only making $8.95 in paragraph five. So they have him under contract. The problem is, until they get rid of Garoppolo, they can't go to either one of those guys and get them really tied up.
It all leads back to Jimmy G. One way or another, it leads back
to Jimmy G. Isn't it just amazing how he kind of has stopped? Whereas is the Browns, they don't need to. They need to move Baker to clean up their locker room. They need to meet Baker to give Watson a chance. But they have enough cap room to do it. But they're gonna need to make a decision. And I think ultimately that's gonna have to come on draft day. Do I think the Panthers trade for him? I don't know. Do I think Seattle does? I don't know. The one thing about Baker is, I think ultimately people now have seen that Baker perhaps wasn't the first overall pick in the draft. And of all the quarterbacks that were picked, you know, he's probably the one who's least likely to be successful moving forward other than Rosen.
Yeah. No, Baker's going to be having to compete for a
starting job. Darnold, too,
Darnold.
Well,
what do you mean by Darnold's QB1, according to our buddy Ben McAdoo over there in Carolina?
Well, what did they expect McAdoo to say, though?
He's the only quarterback on the roster.
Like, you know, who's the starter? I mean, P.J. Walker? I mean, like, seriously, you know? Like, what did they expect poor Ben to say? Oh, no, we don't have a starter. We're just going to play with 10. We're going to be like Hoosiers and go out there and just play with 10. You know, we're gonna do it. I'm going to become Norman Dale and just play with 10 because I'm not putting a guy quarterback. I mean, what did they expect?
Yeah, he was in a tough spot in that situation there. But he, I guess, put his foot in his mouth, as he said there, and was able to clarify that. Debo Samuel, he wants his money. Other wide receivers from that class that we talked about earlier want their money. A.J. Brown with the Titans, they appear to be working on a deal, but he wants his money ASAP, as does Terry McLaurin for the Washington Commanders. DK Metcalf, he's also eligible for an extension as well. Cooper Kupp, he could get some money there after being Super Bowl MVP. Which of these guys do you think that you would be more inclined to pay? If you were to rank them there from Debo Samuel, A.J. Brown, Terry McLaurin, DK Metcalf, Cooper Kupp, which one would you be more comfortable paying going down the list there?
Well, Kupp's just going to get a raise, so he doesn't really count. I mean, he's in that other category, so you know he's going to get paid. I think, obviously, Debo is such an integral part of what they do offensively. I think I'd have to pay him. A.J. Brown is too. I mean, for all these guys that they brought in Tennessee to be the guy, you know, Corey Davis, the fifth pick overall in the draft. I mean, if there isn't ever a reason that Bill Walsh always would say, receiver is the last position you fix on your team when your team's really good. It's the, you know, Tennessee picks Corey Davis at what, 5? And they get A.J. Brown at what number they get him at? 51?
Yeah, he was second round, yeah.
I mean, who's better? You know, like, who's a better player? They both have limitations in terms of vertical speed, but who's the better player, right? I mean, it's hard as shit to tackle. It's hard as shit to tackle A.J. Brown. So, That was his point. Like, there's other guys. I mean, Debo's a second rounder. There's other guys out there that you could find that are just different. And I think ultimately when one separates himself, then you've got to say, okay, he's part of our offense. We'll pay him because we have to. But I think if you have a young quarterback, you can afford to pay these guys. That's what makes the Tyreek Hill thing so interesting, is they paid Mahomes and they gave up Hill. Eventually they gave up Hill because of where they are with their cap, because they fixed their line. I mean, think about it. FM, their offensive line in Kansas City, they got left tackle, they're paying the most money. The left guard, they're paying the most money. The center's a draft choice. But they put some real resources into their line, which they should do because they got to protect their number one resource, which is Mahomes.
Yeah, you mentioned all these receivers not being first-round picks. Terry McLaurin out there in Washington, he was a third-round pick, 76th overall. DK Metcalf, who you didn't mention, which I'm interested in because I'm going to ask you this here. Is DK Metcalf the guy that you would trade if you were general manager? Because I know you said that you'd pay Cooper Kupp, he's going to get paid, Debo Samuel, A.J. Brown. But what about A.J. Brown's former college teammate, DK Metcalf?
You know, I was wrong on Metcalf coming out. I thought Metcalf was going to be just a vertical outside guy. I think he's really improved his route tree. I thought his route tree was limited. You know, I thought he was not going to be able to run all the things, because he's so stiff and tight, but he's been improved in those areas. So would I pay him? Yeah, I probably would, depending on what the deal was and depending on what my options were. Same thing with A.J. Brown. I think it's always about give and take. I don't think it's – like, to me, I'm paying Debo. The other guys, I'm looking over the landscape and saying, okay, what do I need? The problem with Tennessee is they need really good run-after-the-catch players to help Tannehill. They do need, they need that. Same thing in, I mean, look, Seattle doesn't have any – if they go young quarterback, then they should pay Metcalf because they're going to need to surround him with really good players. I think a lot of it lays layers into your team. What do you do with your football team?
And it's interesting because this NFL draft is, once again, loaded with wide receivers. We've seen the last two drafts, 6-7 wide receivers going in the first round there. It's a position that the college game is really sending a lot of talented players in droves. How would that factor into your decision, whether paying some of these veteran guys of, okay, maybe I can just go and draft a guy in the first, second round and just kind of keep recycling that receiver position?
Well, I think you got to be right on the position. I think it's the hardest position in the draft to evaluate because none of them get to play against press coverage. They all just run off the line. They get into the route, and everybody goes all Dick Vitale all over it. Oh, my God, he's the greatest receiver of all time. He catches an out, right? You know, and so I think you got to be really careful, and you got to be good at evaluating them. I mean, I think that's where Pittsburgh has gained an advantage. They've been able to draft guys, Hines Ward in the third round, you know, Juju in the second. You know, they've been able to find these guys and develop them, and they haven't had to put a huge resource into them. Because look, think about it. I mean, Cooper Kupp's a third rounder. Sammy Watkins, people are trading up for him. Who got the better player? You know? Mm-hmm. Like, this is one of the things I think you have to do in every single draft is you've got to sit there and say, if this player Y compared to player Z, are they similar? And how much of a difference is there? You know, how much is now to the media? There's no way. But in every draft, Femi, in every single draft, there's a line of demarcation, right? So in this draft, I think there's probably six. And then after that, most of the players picked after six are probably going to be somewhere closer in grade than what we're made out to believe. And you as a general manager, you've got to be able to say, okay, here's if I this guy and that guy are similar, let me go get that. And a lot of it comes back to your drafting philosophy.
Yeah, it all comes back to the draft, and it all comes back to the quarterbacks in the draft. We're going to find the line of demarcation with these signal callers on the other side. Stay with us here. This is the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. I mean, we have a plethora of games to bet on. You can bet on game-by-game, totals, sides, series props, conference finals, MVP, NBA finals, MVP, whatever you want. DraftKings has it. So all you have to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHUFFLE. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, Michael, it's the position that moves the needle the most. The quarterbacks coming up here in this NFL draft, 7 days away. And I'm just fascinated by how many we could see go in the first round, how many could pan out to being productive starters.
Are you falling in that trap?
I'm not falling in
are
the trap.
Are you falling for that?
But I want to ask you, like, what are you hearing from people around the league? I know you got some buddies around the league about where do these quarterbacks stack up? Because I'm seeing some people with one, maybe even two going in the top 10, which finds it's hard to believe when you watch college football this past year, but we know the quarterback thirst is real.
See, there you go. You just answered your own question. When you watch college football this year, you have a hard time. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. Is I you know, when I first watched Sam Howell at North Carolina, I thought, wow, this guy's going to be really good. He could be a top five pick. As a freshman, I thought, oh, wow, this guy's really good. Did some, you know, looked at his background, all that stuff. And then as I watched him play at North Carolina, I didn't have that same feeling, you know. The same thing happened with me with Zach Wilson. I first saw Zach Wilson. Patrick and I were talking about on the show, and I'm like, man, that guy's really good. And then next thing I know, you know, he got hurt, and then he came really on. But for me, you know, this draft class, I think, and I go back to the grading system that we started in Cleveland. They still use in New England. They still use in Houston. Teams to use it is you have to judge the player and grade them. And I can't get any of these quarterbacks above what I would consider a 62 player, which is a potential starter down the line, but never a top 10 player. Good grade, but how do you take that? This is a second round draft of quarterbacks that people are the PR machine are driving them into the first round. And, you know, look, I've heard Seattle loves Malik Willis. Okay. You know, like he didn't throw a touchdown pass against a level of comp. I mean, how do you love him? His arm, his release is funny. You know, he wants to run more than he wants to throw. Mentally, can he handle all the things you want him to do at the line of scrimmage? I think that's going to be something you need to really investigate. Can he lead the team? Is he mature enough to lead the team, become the guy? See, what I don't think fans or draft nicks understand, when you draft this guy, you bring him in your locker room, he represents who you are. Mm-hmm. So, like, say you're the Carolina Panthers and everybody has him picking Kenny Pickett, right? You go out to practice and Darnold throws the ball better than Pickett. The team's going to look around and say, like, why did we do that? Like, seriously, we drafted this guy and we have this. Like, it's different. You can't, you got to, the guy you bring in has got to be able to sell the guys in the locker room, not the fans. He's got to sell those other people that he's the guy. You know, Mayfield, for all the hoopla, he was able to do that until the game. He had some moxie to him. Do these guys have moxie? You know, that's what I worry about. I don't see it. And so, to me, I'm gonna recommend on all the VEASAN shows to take the under. You know, like, I think the under 3.5 is the perfect number. I really do. But, I mean, you know, I've heard somebody say there could be five. Like, there's not five guys in this draft that play quarterback that'll end up being starters. Like, nobody ever, Femi, wants to go back. Like if you take your car, and I'm going to write about this for Daily Coach. If you take your car to a mechanic, right, one of the things the mechanic has to be able to do before he becomes a true mechanic, like a high level man, is he's got to be able to build a car from scratch. Like, he's got to be able to put together an engine. Why? Because when he puts together an engine, he obviously knows why it breaks down, and then he can fix it. None of these teams have studied the litany of quarterbacks over the years and figured out why they've broken down. Like, when I talk about Willis, he has all the symptoms of quarterbacks that haven't been successful. But nobody pays attention to it. When I talk about Pickett, he has all the symptoms of quarterbacks that haven't been successful, but nobody talks about it, right? Like, nobody goes to it. They just assume it's going to be okay. It's like what they did in Austin Powers, you know, they just assume it's all going to go to plan. Like, seriously, like, how do you do that? It's not going to go all to plan. Like, it isn't. There's something there. You can't invent it. Like, this is a draft that you can't invent the quarterback position on. And I think ultimately that's going to be the biggest challenge.
You said you would recommend the under on 3.5 quarterbacks being selected in the first round. Right now, that number's actually moved down over at DraftKings, our show sponsor. It's now 2.5, Michael.
Smart.
What would you do there?
For the money,
would you go over?
I would probably, you know, there I think it's one of those ones where I think they could lean towards the over. Like, a lot of people see this, like Desmond Ridder. Desmond Ridder's too inconsistent for me to go in the first. But the thing that hesitates me a little bit here, Femi, is if you're a team picking in the 20 to 22 to 32 range and you want to get this guy to get the fifth year of the contract, you need to get it on the quarterback, right? And so I think that would be the case. So I would lean probably over 3, but I don't think I would lean more than that. I think that would be right. I think to me, 4 is, to me, I don't see 4. If you're picking 4, yeah, I think if you're picking 4 quarterbacks, I don't see it. Like, I don't see it. I mean, Carolina needs a quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Atlanta may take a quarterback. Seattle could take a quarterback, but who are they? Like, put the name in. Put the name in. Like, tell me who they are. Like, who's going to go? Willis, right? We think Willis is going to go somewhere in the first round. Who else would they?
I mean, maybe your guy Ritter. Ritter, could, it sounds like he's got a lot of first round buzz.
Matt Corral has Corral, some buzz, yeah. But Matt Corral's an undersized guy who's got a lot of talent,
but he's not a real big guy.
And a lot of injuries. And he's going to describe Matt Corral. He has all the problems when you're that mechanic trying to reconstruct the engine. He has all the problems that you had before. You follow me? So, I mean, like, seriously, you're walking into you turn that card in, and you're basically, once you turn that card in, you're going to be looking for a quarterback in 2 years.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's definitely fair points that you bring up here. But I guess my only pushback would be, we've seen all these teams do extensive homework on these quarterbacks. I mean, Carolina brought in 6 quarterbacks on their pre-draft visits. Seattle's brought in quarterbacks. Pittsburgh has brought in quarterbacks. Is this just standard protocol, or is there also smoke there signaling that they might be looking at QBs in the first round?
No, I think it's not. I think it's due diligence, right? So you bring in a picket, you sit him in front of a board, and you go over stuff with them. What you do is you go over the offense. You try to get him to see how much his learning curve is. What kind of kid is this? You know, you're learning about the kid. You know, you're trying to get one-on-one time to really give you an idea about the kid's personality and what he's made of, and can he learn what you want him to do, and can he lead the team? What kind of command does he have? You know, when we brought Garoppolo in, we brought him in with Johnny Manziel at the same day. And one of the reasons why we picked Garoppolo is because his command, his demeanor, the way he behaved in that interview, we felt like he wouldn't be intimidated by the great Tom Brady, that he would be able to do those things. That's what you're learning. It's not because people think you bring guys in because you've made up your mind. No, you're bringing guys in because you're looking for more information.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to put out, because everyone looks at it and says, oh, Carolina brought in Kenny Pickett. Here we go. Must be Pickett at 6. But I think that's an awesome point that you brought up there, that they're gaining more information on Pickett. It's not that they're sold on him. They're trying to see what he's all about.
Right. And they probably brought in other quarterbacks, too, that nobody knows about. Yep. You know, they probably brought in other. And now they're going to sit and figure out, okay, what are we going to do with these guys? Like, let's break them down. Let's tear this thing down. Let's understand where we're going.
Is there a team, because you mentioned when you were in New England how you guys brought in Jimmy Garoppolo, ended up drafting him in the second round there. Which team do you think could be a team that's not really in need of a quarterback, but still might take a quarterback there in this maybe back half of the first round or early second round? Is there a team out there that you're hearing about that's got the hots for a QB that already has a solidified starter?
No, I haven't heard that. I mean, I think to me that's too valuable of a pick. Like everybody I've heard Seattle on a quarterback. I've heard Atlanta on a quarterback, right? I mean, if Atlanta takes a quarterback, first of all, they need a quarterback because Mariota's going to get killed with that offensive line, you know? And so all I keep hearing is there's 6 players in this draft. And really it starts with the defensive lineman, Walker and Hutchinson. There's debate. What's Jacksonville going to do? I don't think Jacksonville is not going to take an offensive lineman. I mean, if they say they take Evan Neal, they can play Evan Neal at guard for a year while they got, or the Robinson, or if they take the kid Ikwanu from North Carolina State, he might end up being a guard anyway. So they could put him at left guard or put him at right guard while they have Robinson over at left tackle and go from there. So I don't think that's been ruled out. You know, Detroit's going to be a pass rusher. I mean, why the coach would come out and say he doesn't want Thibodeau, I have no idea. But, you know, they're going to take a rusher. And then I think ultimately, so between Charles Cross, Thibodeau, Hutchinson, Walker, Icky, and probably, you know, and Neal, those 6 players to me are probably going to be in that top 6 somewhere. And then after that, when the Giants pick at 7, then I think the corners start to come into play.
Oh, that's interesting.
But I think... I think ultimately it's an offensive and a defensive line draft, the first 6 picks.
But that's interesting that you didn't mention Ahmad Sauce Gardner, the cornerback from Cincinnati, in that 6, because I know that's a guy that we're hearing some teams really, really love him, or maybe Derek Stingley. So you think that there's those 6 guys, the tackles, the edge rushers, that are seen around the league as better than the cornerbacks, whether it be Gardner out of Cincinnati or Stingley out of LSU?
Yeah, I think Stingley didn't play enough. I think Gardner, everybody loves Gardner. You know, I think everybody loves Gardner. I think, you know, I think probably in this draft, the line of demarcation probably goes with 8 players, maybe. You know, I think Jameson Williams would be one of those eight if you had him, but unfortunately he's coming out of an injury. So let's say seven. I would put Gardner in one of the top. But I think when you look at it, I think if you're the Giants and you have a chance to pick a legitimate left tackle, whether it's Neil or Cross, you got to try to do that. I think that's the issue that you have really with Carolina. Carolina's right there at six. They need a left tackle. What happens if all the left tackles are gone? I mean, what happens if all they're gone? What do they do then? I mean, people have them just penciled right in for a quarterback. I think at that point, would they take a defensive lineman? If Walker were to slip to six, would they take him? Who knows? But I think ultimately they have a position in the draft where if something slips to them, offense or defense alignment, they'll get their phone will ring like crazy.
I was about to say, like, Carolina is kind of one of those teams that wants to trade back since they don't have a pick on Friday.
Well, I think they do. And then I think here's the question you have to ask yourself. If you're Carolina, do you think Penning from Northern Iowa could be your left tackle? You know, would you take a chance on another offense? Is there the kid from Rutgers who's a really good? Zion Johnson's a really good player. If you move back, do you take him? See what I'm saying? You go all the way back. Do you know what I mean? You got to improve your line. So, or is there a defensive lineman? And I think once you move back, so I see Steven's hand going up here, but I think there's three levels of drafters, okay? And I think fans don't always understand this. There's three levels of drafter. I wrote about this in the new book. And so there's the first level of a drafter, a guy who really runs the draft. Most people watch the video. You watch the video of the draft room, and it's all for theatrics. I mean, they're pretending like who's in charge, but ultimately there's one guy in charge, right? And so the drafter, you've got to profile the drafter. Some teams have a guy who run the draft. Like Cincinnati, they're a static drafting team. They'll pick whichever comes to them. They rarely move. The New York Giants back in the day were a static picking team. They're just going to pick their picks, right? Then there's the lover, the team that falls in love with a player and they trade up no matter what they do. They love, they just want to come out of the draft with the players they love. They got four or five guys. They're happy with what they get done. And then there's the guy that basically wants to go and get into the pack. You know, he's a cluster drafter. Trade back down. I'm in this cluster. I'm going to get one of these good players. I don't care what it is. The perfect example of all this is the Ed Reed draft. Do you remember the Ed Reed draft?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ozzie Newsome's sitting there 24, right? They're sitting there at the 24th pick in the draft. We're at 23 with Napoleon Harris. I'm killing Napoleon Harris. You know, and he's got bad tape. 2 days before the draft, they make a tape on Napoleon Harris. They show it to Al Davis. I finally see it. It's Junior Seau. He's Junior Seau. And a bunch of us who didn't really like him, we were like, oh, my God. But the scouts loved him. So anyway, back to Ed Reed. They pick. So Ozzie has three players he wants to pick. He wants to pick Levi Jones, William Green, the running back from Boston College, and he wants to pick Napoleon. He sits right at his pick. Levi goes 10. He doesn't move. Green goes, I think, 13. He doesn't move. And us, naturally, right in front of him, we pick Napoleon Harris. And so what does he do? He settles for Ed Reed. The next day, the Baltimore Sun headlines is, steady, not sizzling, Ed Reed comes to Baltimore. 2 years later, he's the most valuable player in the league. That's my point.
That is the draft in a nutshell there. Stick and pick sometimes is the best way to go. We're going to take another quick break. We'll wrap things up on the other side. This is the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi. All right, we couldn't get done with this podcast until we talked a little Philadelphia 76ers. Our pop culture minute is now Sixers in 60 seconds. Well, that game last night, Michael?
Oh, my God, Kenny. I mean, I was wrong on this. I got to be honest. I have been, you know, I have always been critical of Embiid in terms of his conditioning, which I think he's improved on.
Mm-hmm.
But since the playoffs, he's raised his level of play tremendously. It's been sensational. And so, I mean, hats off. I mean, he's saving Doc. I mean, did you see the end of the game at the timeout, the play they ran to get the shot off at the end of the game?
I mean, both the one at the end of regulation and the end of OT, they were both horrific.
I mean, how bad were those plays? Like, what are we drawing over there? I mean, I could get Dominic to draw something better on his sketch pad. Like, seriously. Like, I get Dominic, I'll put the court in there. I'll get Leo, I'll get Dean, I'll get them all. Where was that? What did you see? Like, what was that?
I was watching the game and I was like, this is stuff that you see in college basketball March Madness where the kids are amateurs and not professionals because it looked that bad.
It was bad, man. It was horrible. I mean, the game's on the line. Got a chance to win the game, and you can't even make, you know, you don't. There's nothing in the repertoire that's better than that. I mean, that's what we come up with. I mean, you know, I mean, oh my God. But hey, look, they won, and he's raised his level tremendously. I mean, the other series. I mean, I know you're watching Brooklyn.
Oh yeah.
You're watching Brooklyn, Boston. I mean, Boston's just tougher and grittier than anybody. I mean, you know, right now, I don't know what the number is on Boston to represent the East, but, man, they're hard to play right now. They get behind. Their defense gets them back into games. They're really good. But, you know, right now, I mean, for it's been hard to find anything good to watch on any of these programs. What did I watch recently?
And also this time of year is just difficult. I mean, the playoffs are every single night. I mean, I'm a little slow in terms of the draft preparation and the NBA playoffs. I'm a little slow on my Sopranos watching right now, but we're going to get caught up because when all these things go away and it's the dead of the summer in July, I'm going to be able to rip through about two seasons in a week.
We're going to do the Soprano pod on here. We'll go through every single one because it's basically comes back to life. It's certainly the, you know, it's the other one. Have you ever watched The Wire? Have you watched The Wire?
I've watched one season of The Wire. That's another one that I have my list of.
You let me get that going.
Yes.
I was writing about The Wire the other day because I was writing about how when the NFL and the AFL merged together, they did so after the Giants violated what was in The Wire. In The Wire, according to The Wire, they had this Sunday truce, right? That on Sunday, there was no crime activity, that both sides, East and West Baltimore, had to separate themselves, right? So, but back in the day, in the AFL merger, the Giants of all teams signed Gogolak, the kicker, and they had an unwritten rule in the AFL NFL where if it was open warfare for the rookies, for the draft picks. Mm-hmm. But for veterans, if you played for a team in the AFL or you played for a team in the NFL, unless the team didn't want them anymore, they didn't sign those players. Like, they didn't sign those guys. The rookies, open market. The Giants go ahead and sign Gogolak, the first soccer kicker, right, to a contract when the Bills didn't really renege his right, basically said they didn't want him. That opened up warfare. Al Davis went to the mattresses. He got elected commissioner, you know, because they threw out the commissioner. He comes in and he's going to the mattresses, signing Roman Gabriel, they're signing everybody. And then they got the truce, and I wrote about it because somebody violated the Sunday truce.
Yeah. And that's what, when somebody violates it, then it's, like you mentioned, it's all hell breaks loose, and that's what happened with the AFL-NFL merger. But, I mean, we're better off for the merger. Now it's created the best league in our country, and it's why we love it, because the NFL, it never stops, it never sleeps, with the draft coming up in just a week.
The stories are fascinating through it. They really are. And Al would share some of them with me, especially when he talked about the great Lance Allworth, because he literally signed Lance Allworth on the field. He signed Fred Blitkoff on the field, too, after a game. But Allworth was his specialty. Literally, there's a picture of Al Davis signing Lance Allworth on the field at Tulane Stadium after the Sugar Bowl when they lost to Ole Miss.
Can you imagine that happening today? Like, that is insane.
I can't imagine. I mean, he was a charmer. I mean, he could charm the, you know, as Bill Parcells would say about Jerry Jones, he could talk a cat off the top of a fish truck. Well, he could talk a cat off the top of a fish truck, too, now. He was good.
Selling ice to Eskimos.
No doubt.
That's what we're doing. Before we wrap things up, quick show programming note. Because next week is the NFL draft, we're not giving you one podcast. We're giving you two podcasts next week. Monday, we'll kick off our week of the draft coverage. And then also on draft day, that Thursday morning, another podcast will be hitting your phone or whichever device you choose to listen to us from. But two podcasts, Michael, next week. And you'll be in Vegas, though, for one of them. I cannot wait to finally have you down here in the desert.
I'm excited.
You looking forward to anything?
Yeah.
You looking forward to any outside of the draft stuff?
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing my man Mick, my son, who's out there, which makes the trip even better. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That'll be fun. I'm looking forward to seeing the draft. And, you know, the one thing about, we'll get through this perception. We'll get through the perception and reality. Right now, we're still in the perception phase. Mm-hmm. Everybody's taking quarterbacks and everybody's just, you know, doing what they're doing. But none of it's true.
Potentially five quarterbacks in the first round.
Yeah. Oh, let's take six. Why not six? Even though what you said to start this show, there's really the college season didn't produce six very good quarterbacks. But now all of a sudden, with no games being played, and then here's the great part. is when these quarterbacks fail, everybody will blame the teams for, you know, not paying attention to the game tape.
Isn't that fascinating, huh? Isn't that fascinating how it works out? It is the vicious cycle because we get to sit back and judge while they actually have their jobs on the line. But that's why we got the good jobs here, Michael. And that does it for us here on the GM Shuffle podcast. Thank you to Michael, as always. Thank you to our producer, Stephen Bond, on the ones and twos. Thank you to you guys, our loyal listeners. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you find your podcast. Michael, talk to you Monday.
Thanks, fam.